Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. My name is Trevor Sikkema. His name is Benjamin Solak. It is a beautiful Monday morning. We are still rolling through the guest mock draft series for 2019. Ben, we got the top 10 down. We got 10 more to go.
Imagine not starting your week. Imagine not starting your Monday with the podcast, Trevor. Can you imagine that?
It could not be me. It
could never be me.
Well, we have an awesome guest to kick things off. We had a strong end of the week last week with Sal and Ben coming on, but we're hitting the ground running here on a Monday again because on the line with us, we have Joe Goodberry to pick for the Cincinnati Bengals. He works for The Athletic and the Locked On Bengals podcast, part of this wonderful network. Joe, how you doing, man? It's good to talk to you.
It's good to talk to you guys. I'm doing great.
All right, so just to give the people a little bit of recap and to give Joe a little bit of a recap, too, on where we are in this guest mock draft. We had Kyler Murray going number one overall. We all kind of think that that's going to happen at this point. Nick Bosa went number two to the 49ers. Jets ended up picking Josh Allen. Raiders went Quinnen Williams, even though, you know, we talked about there being a log jam at interior defensive line. Couldn't deny the talent there. Bucks went Ed Oliver. Thank you, Carmen. Shout out, making the right pick. John Schmelk for the Giants ended up picking Dwayne Haskins to get their quarterback of the future. Jags went Jonah Williams. Lions went Montez Sweat. Bills went TJ Hawkinson. And then the Denver Broncos went Devin White. So that brings us to number 11 and to you, Joe. And I've been doing this almost kind of every show because the whole reason why we like to have guest people on is you know the Bengals better than anybody, certainly way better than us. And so I just wanted to get kind of an overall assessment of how that 2018 season went for the Bengals. Obviously picking at number 11, so didn't go exactly to plan. Right. But what kind of happened with the roster, with the coaching staff, now making some serious changes, really for the first time in a really long time in Cincinnati, making some changes to everything that's going on and some decision-making. Is that change in decision-making really going to make a difference towards the draft and towards, you know, what we saw in free agency in reaction to how they did in 2018?
Yeah, it's kind of unknown territory for anyone that's a Bengals fan or writer or analyst because it's been 16 years since there's been a new coach. I mean, a lot has changed. The game, the franchise, I mean, players, it's all different. So does that mean they'll operate differently? I'd say for the first 3 months, I would say no. They've done exactly what they've typically done in the past, which is low-end free agents bring back their guys, or at least target to bring back their guys, and move forward with leaving one or two positions needed for the draft to fill out your roster, and you go attack those early, which is what they typically do. And I think they did that again this year. But, you know, just to recap last year a little bit, they started off really hot, if you remember. And when everyone was healthy, when Eifert was healthy and A.J. Green and Joe Mixon and Tyler Boyd had a breakout year, the offense looked good. The defense was a problem. And it wasn't a great mix with Terrell Austin, who was fired three quarters of the way through. Marvin Lewis took over the defense and got more production out of them. But by that time, the offense was in shambles and barely recognizable with all the injuries they had. So 3 years in a row now of ending up being one of the worst 12 teams in the league, picking top 12 3 years in a row, it was time for a change. It was time anyways, but this would get somebody fired for most organizations anyways, losing 3 years back-to-back like that. And I think they're in a situation now where they have to decide, are they still the team that went to the playoffs from 2011 to 2015, or are they the next group of players, the young players, the Joe Mixons, the William Jackson, Carl Lawson, Tyler Boyd? You know, those guys really should be the face of your franchise going forward. And if that's the case, how do you build around them rather than how do you build around A.J. Green, Andy Dalton, and Geno Atkins, Carlos Dunlap types?
Right. So if that's the dichotomy, then I'll ask you, just with your thumb on the pulse, obviously, you know, the Bengals have been a place where, like, maybe it's a sleeper quarterback spot if, you know, new head coach comes in, he wants to bring in his guy and start developing his quarterback of the future. What do you think the situation is going to be for Andy Dalton? Do you think that there is that belief that he'll be able to power them to the playoffs again, that they still want to see if they can get a few good years out of a veteran quarterback? Or do you think that it's really on the table, you know, quarterback at 11 and we start to prepare for the next generation?
As always with the Bengals, they seem to have one foot in and one foot out, where it's like they're not ever committed to fully building this roster to win, and they're never fully committed to a full rebuild.
Never a good place to be.
It's not, and that they've been in limbo for a long time, and it's the reason why they've ended up where they are right now. And because of it, I do think they are aware of Andy Dalton, who he is, his struggles, and why they can build around him in terms of, you know exactly what he is, what he'll provide, and that provides stability. And, you know, I always say it's coaches love to have an Andy Dalton because they know he'll run exactly what's supposed to be run and do what's supposed to be done. So you don't have any questions about why that right tackle got beat. You know, if it's a short set and the quarterback's holding onto the ball, if you're watching another more erratic quarterback, well, it makes everyone else look worse around them. And it kind of brings in question the evaluation. But when you have an Andy Dalton, you can evaluate everyone else properly because he's going to do his part. And I think they're aware of that. And I think they feel, well, that's good enough. But they also are very aware, and this is the other hand, that there's 2 years left on his deal. He's going to be 32 this year. And if you're going to extend him, and Mike Brown just recently talked at the owners' meeting, said they have no intention on extending him this year. But if they were, it's probably going to be a big price compared to what they're paying him now, only because that's what veteran quarterbacks seem to get paid. Even, you know, Nick Foles and Joe Flacco can seem to get money, even though they probably aren't worth it. So I think one hand, they're saying, we're not going to extend him. We need to have an eye towards the future and turning this thing over eventually, whether that's this year or next year. If they want to draft a quarterback and have him sit for a year behind Andy Dalton, sounds like a great idea. Maybe you can get some value for Dalton in 2020. And with every new coach, typically you can expect a new quarterback follows. At least the good teams that have done it correctly, it seems to work that way. So they have done their work on a lot of these top quarterbacks. They've met with all of them. They've been to their pro days. I think if the right guy is there, and I don't know who that is at this point, hopefully in the next 3 weeks I can figure it out or get a better idea. We've had less information this year than in typical years, but I do think if the right guy was there, they would pull the trigger because they've really attacked free agency, and I say that with air quotes because they don't attack anything, but they've hit free agency and really left only linebacker as a starting need. So you could do that in day two if you felt the need, if a guy wasn't there. And if the quarterback was there in round one, you take him and you figure the rest out later.
I want to talk to you about the new head coach, Zach Taylor, because I know that certainly there's only been a couple of months and not necessarily anything has happened big time to let you know about tendencies or anything like that, especially since it is his first crack at it. But he was a guy who was the quarterback's coach for the Rams in 2018. There is this obsession with being connected to Sean McVay, no matter how you're connected to him. I mean, we saw the Arizona Cardinals basically put in their statement when they hired Cliff Kingsbury that, oh, he's friends with Sean McVay. It's not even that he was coaching with him or anything. It was just that he was friends with him, and that was almost like defense for them hiring him. But anyways, it's so much of the draft and team building and predicting what the draft is going to look like for each team has to do with past history, but there's obviously not a lot of that with Taylor and being the sole proprietor of him calling the shots. So what have you guys learned about him in these first couple of months? Any hints one way or the other of how he wants to build this team, where he might emphasize picks in the draft or how he attacked free agency, how that might go into the draft as well, and then ultimately when end up might being a few reasons for them picking who they're eventually going to pick at number 11.
Yeah, and the thing about it is they fired the Marvin Lewis, and he had a huge influence on their draft and their team building. There was a lot of going from Mike Brown being the GM, and he's gotten older, he's relinquished some of that control. He's given a lot of it to Duke Tobin, who's been with the team for a long time, and he's basically the de facto GM and definitely the player personnel guy in terms of the draft. And I wonder if that's going to be more of his role still going forward and less of Zach Taylor. I feel like Taylor will have to earn that. And well, of course, he's the head coach. He's going to have his influence on the draft. I just mean, I wonder if he'll have as much influence as Marvin Lewis did, because even in the past few years, the Bengals have gone away from what Lewis wanted. It's no secret within the organization and the people that follow it that Marvin didn't want John Ross, and he wanted somebody else, and the organization still picked Ross. So, they have kind of gone away from leaning on the coach as much and going towards more Duke Tobin. But still, I think if you got a new coach in, he's going to have a lot of influence, especially at the quarterback position, I would assume. But talking about personnel-wise and what he plans to do, he talks about the Rams offense every time it's asked or brought up, like, what kind of offense do you want? And he says, basically, I'd be a fool not to try and run the Rams offense. So looking at it that way, and we're saying, okay, then it's a 3 wide receiver, 11 personnel type, 90%+ of the time, right?
Yeah.
A lot of play action, a lot of outside zone running. I think, to me, that makes perfect sense for Joe Mixon. I think it makes perfect sense to try and hide this offensive line with some help of the play action. And the 3 receivers they have, if they can get John Ross to at least be the guy that's running jet sweeps and getting some right. handoffs or screens, that should work at the very least. So they have the pieces there to run their offense. For me, the biggest question mark is defense and what they're going to do. They have been very noncommittal on what type of defense it is. Famously, we made jokes in the Bengals community that they couldn't find a defensive coordinator, and even guys right. they were bringing in, they would be like, he wasn't a fit, and everyone would question, well, what's the fit? What are you looking for? Because he's bringing in 3-4 guys, 4-3 guys, which I don't think matters that much in the NFL anymore because everyone's in a sub package nickel defense. But how you create those pressure packages out of your front six alignment matters, and the guys they ended up bringing in and seems to have varied backgrounds, bunch of different, and even still they're bringing free agents in, like a Shaq Barrett, like, and telling him, oh, you would be an edge defender. I'm like, oh, edge, that's a great thing to hear. Like, that's what I want to hear. Not defensive end, not linebacker. They kind of, figure it out from
sure.
there. And they've got Josh Allen from Kentucky in this week. And I'm like, okay, there's another guy. So what are you guys planning on doing? Is Carl Lawson and Josh Allen your two guys? I don't think Allen will be there. I'm just using it as a point of, I think they're going to be much more multiple on defense, which leads me to not know what they want to do with that front seven at all.
Yeah, no, it was wild watching that process as the Bengals were trying to hire a defensive coordinator and nobody wanted to go.
I'm so glad they didn't get Todd Grantham because I love what he's doing at Florida and I did not want him to leave. So I'm just glad you didn't take him.
How do you think, obviously, like, Marvin Lewis became the heel of a couple of jokes by the end of his tenure. Like you said, Cincinnati now missed the playoffs for the past 3 years. To what extent do you think that difficulty hiring a defensive coordinator, do you think that reflects more on the available personnel? Do you think it reflects on the way that kind of the Bengals, front office is a little bit, like you said, like, it's incurring a change right now and it's a little unclear who's who? Does it reflect on ownership? Kind of what's that process like, going through? It's very uncommon to see a team struggle to hire a coordinator because usually there's so many guys who are chomping at the bit to get a job like that. So what do you think that reflects on in the Bengals organization specifically?
I think not having the figurehead or the single voice of the franchise, which was definitely Marvin Lewis, at least publicly. And when he spoke and when he wanted something, and especially a coach, he was getting the coaches he wanted for a long time. And I think when Zach Taylor was still with the Rams, the Bengals publicly at least respected the process and said, well, we can't bring him in. We really can't talk until he's done with the Rams. Now, you would think that's just speak and you're going to do it and go through your process. But then afterwards, they're like, okay, we're starting the coach search. And then for about a week, you didn't hear anything. And I'm like, wait, so you guys are serious? You really didn't have a whole lineup of coaches you wanted to bring in? So that was very weird from the outside. And they brought in a few guys that really just didn't agree to terms. Zach Taylor even said, I brought in Jack Del Rio, and I thought he'd be the guy. And then when we got to sit down and talking, it just didn't work out. We had different ideas on how we wanted to run the defense. And it's just that it was very odd to me because especially when you read or you talk to other people that know the hiring process, when a coach comes in, he says, this is the coordinator I want to have on offense. This is the old line coach I want to bring in. This is the defensive coordinator I want to bring in, and I believe I can get these guys. Well, you should be able to have all that set and ready to go, and it seemed they didn't have that. And they ended up falling on Lou Anarumo, who was a defensive backs coach for the Giants. He worked with Zach Taylor in Miami when Taylor was there. I don't know. It seems like most of the guys he hired were people he worked with before, and to me, that doesn't seem like the best process.
Joe, I know that you are more into the draft than I know other beat reporters that we're going to have on this show, so I'd be remiss if I didn't talk a little bit of just overall draft with you. In this class, I guess you can give it a Bengals spin, certainly, if you want, because that's who you're looking for. Who are some of the positions that you really like in this class, or positions that even you can, again, tie it into Cincinnati, who they might be looking to dip on, whether it is in the first round or maybe the second and third rounds as well? What are some areas of the draft that you're excited about and some of those players?
Yeah, and I tend to look at the positions of need first for the team because that makes sense. And then as they start eliminating some of those needs in free agency, you can't help but that you've already looked at offensive tackle so much that you've kind of fallen in love with a few prospects.
Sure,
and
right.
even though I'm not sure they're going to spend the ninth pick now because they're paying Bobby Hart $7.4 million this year, you still look at it and say there's a lot of guys that would be instant upgrades. So you end up saying, man, it's a really good tackle class. And there's even guys in round two, three, and four that I think would really, you know, guys I want to take a shot on, whether that's a Chuma Edoga, Titus Howard, Max Sharping, even Caleb McGarry, even though he's got short arms, I think movement-wise, tape-wise, second round wouldn't be out of question. So when I watch it, I start with those positions. So I've been heavy on linebacker also. I don't think there's any reason not to like a Devin White and a Devin Bush. I think, especially the way Bush, and we'll probably talk about him in a minute, but especially the way he tested and looked and during drills, it really surprised me. Went from a target, like a guy that, man, I hope he's there at 42, to, well, now we got to consider him at 11.
Right. And then, right.
And then other guys emerge, Blake Cashman, right? And then you go back and watch, and you go, wow, this guy's actually really good. So you start to end up having these targets on D2, day three. Jermaine Pratt's another one. While he's not the greatest guy in coverage, I thought he tested well for a downhill run-stuffing enforcement-type middle linebacker that I think really could help them down the line if he supplants Preston Brown in the inside. So I've come to appreciate a lot of positions. The one to me that in this class, and obviously I think everyone's going to say this, the defensive line is just insane. I keep coming to the top 15 or so, maybe even top 20, is going to be littered with potential Pro Bowl defensive linemen. But then as you get deeper in the class, you get there in the second round, and again, you're like, man, there's going to be some really good players. And then what if it's a year where these undersized and quicker defensive tackles go a little bit later? Is Kalen Saunders and Ronnell Wren going to be day three guys? Because if that's the case, man, I'd love to get that Grady Jarrett, you know, in the fifth round.
Sure, it happens, right?
And if they're falling, I want to jump on it. So, I think it's a really good class at the right positions. Tight end, too. We could talk all day about tight ends. And I think definitely the second tier for tight ends, it's probably similar to all these positions we said with tackle and linebacker also. There's a group of the second tier, which maybe even because of the gap between first and second, maybe it's even really truly a third tier. But, man, there's so many guys to pick from at tight end that I think there's going to be some teams that you're going to look back and say, man, why didn't they take Josh Oliver instead of Irv Smith in the second round? You know, and we're going to look back and say, yeah, they should have done that. And I just think it's going to be, you know, pick your poison and what do you need and roll the dice on a good group.
All right, so you highlighted a lot of the positions, a lot of the ones that Cincinnati needs as well. So I guess it is time. Number 11, Joe, who are you picking? With the board kind of is what it is, when we explained that a little bit earlier, who would you pick if you were the Bengals in this spot here at the number one or the number 11 overall pick?
Yeah, and I'd like to say I agreed to do this before you sent me who went in the first top 10 picks, because I was like, yeah, of course I'll do this. This will be fun. I'll get someone really good. And then I look at the top 10 and I'm like, okay, all right, sounds normal. The first four are great. Oh, Ed Oliver, number
five. I think I was telling Joe, I don't know if I told Ben this, but the second that Carmen picked Ed Oliver at number five for the Buccaneers, like almost every single other team past them who was coming on was like, dang it, I wanted Oliver. Like every single one of them was saying that. So that's no surprise that I think Bengals fans are certainly hoping out for Oliver as well.
And I think that's pretty representative of how, you know, people like us view it and view Oliver as, man, he's got the chance to be Aaron Donald. Now, it'd be crazy to compare him to the best defensive player in the league, right? You should not do that. But
we knew this was going to happen, right? I mean, at the beginning of the year in like August, it was a lock. Bosa's one, Oliver's two. And there were even a couple of people who would have Oliver one. Then all of a sudden, there was like, Oliver's weight's an issue. Now he's sliding all the way back to like the end of the first round. I saw some mock drafts didn't even have him in the first. This was so inevitable that 3 weeks before the draft, people were going to go, yeah, let's move Ed Oliver back up. And like all of a sudden, it's like top five again.
Well,
so
listen, he ran his pro day, Trevor. Didn't you see? Oh, he's as quick as he always has been.
Guy on tape who was explosive ends up being explosive. Incredible.
Right. Yeah, insanely athletic guy. Still insanely athletic.
What do you know?
It's... And that's the thing, too, is that even I talk to other people and they go, well, he's undersized still or he doesn't have the power. I'm like, I don't think you're watching him then, because this guy is super strong. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being, obviously, he should end up in a really good defensive tackle class, should end up being a top five player from this draft. So when he went, I was like, makes sense, but I'm kind of bummed out because I've gotten used to the idea of maybe there's a chance he's there. Aaron Donald did go 13th overall in a good defensive tackle class, too. So, or defensive line class, I should say. So I was bummed by that. And then seeing Jonah Williams come off the board, Devin White go off at 10, one pick before the Bengals. For me, this reminds me of last year where I really wanted Frank Ragnow at 21. He goes 20. No one expects it, right? And I'm like, no. That means they're going to take Billy Price, even though Price is a fine prospect. He wasn't Frank Ragnow in my eyes. And then Hockenson is the guy I fall back on when Oliver, Jonah Williams, and Devin White have gone ahead of me in other in mock simulations or mock draft machines, as you guys have at the Draft Network. And so Hockenson was the guy I was like, oh, there we go. So there's four guys that have gone that I would have targeted. And now it leaves me, okay, this is now off of my feelings and what I feel I would do or what the Bengals should do into now this is definitely what they would probably do. And they would stay true to their board, or at least their board's very dependent on position of need. And I think they'd say, listen, I don't think the gap's that big between Devin White and Devin Bush at linebacker. And
I agree.
Testing-wise, they're almost exact. Size-wise, there's not much of a difference, maybe an inch in height. I think on tape, there's times that Devin Bush looks better than Devin White.
Yup. And
listen, you are among friends of the Devin Bush over Devin White crew right now, if that's where we're going.
Yeah, and I only think Devin White gets the consensus that he's ranked higher is because he's been there for so long. And rather than if we had fresh eyes on both guys, it'd probably be a bit more mixed. And there are some people that think Bush is better. But my point is, you're right. And my point is that I think they would say, fine, we're getting a linebacker at a position of need, a guy that's highly athletic, downhill run stuffer, can enforce his will, can run sideline to sideline. Sure, he's got some issues. I think for me, when he gets wrapped up in linemen, and I think his vision becomes an issue, he's 5'11". It's going to happen. And there at times I wish he was asked to do more in coverage, especially with what he showed at the combine and pro day in terms of movement skills and running. I'm like, this guy should have been asked to drop more instead of blitzing as much as he did.
Sure.
So you think that there's potentially a much more upside for him in coverage. So for me, I think it makes a lot of sense. He comes in, he steps into a starting role. I think this pretty much solidifies all 22 plus starters on the roster if you go and get a linebacker in the first round. So I think this makes most sense. I think they would do it. I think the only other guys I'd consider here is Noah Fant enough of a freak to say, you know what, we only have 1 year left on Eifert. CJ Uzomah is just a guy, even though we like him, and he's definitely not Noah Fant. And you take him and you let him groom for a year, because tight ends normally take a year to fully step in the NFL. Or do you say, like, all right, defensive tackle Christian Wilkins, he was highly productive. While he doesn't really stand out as one trait, he constantly disrupted offenses, and that's something that they could definitely use next to Geno Atkins. For me, the other guy I would have considered, and I'd heavily consider, is Brian Burns, because not only is he athletic, I mean, freak-wise, but, man, the movement skills he showed at the combine, I've said this like four times about different people, but it made me go back and watch Von Miller and Khalil Mack at their combine performances, because I said, Brian Burns doesn't look like these other guys out there. He's moving so fluid and so deliberate with each step, man. One foot down, one toe down, and he's cutting off it. And then obviously the tape, in my opinion, was really good. And there's some games that are fantastic. His production is off the charts too. So for me, I really like Brian Burns. And I think if you're telling me I can get a premier edge rusher, I think he'd probably go top six in a normal defensive line class. That's good value. But at the same time, I think Bush makes a lot of sense for them. I think he's a good prospect, and I'm not mad if they make that pick.
Joe, that was awesome, man. That was fantastic stuff, not only on the Bengals, but like I said, love to get some guys who really have their hand in the draft as well. You certainly fill both of those roles here picking for the Bengals. We really appreciate it, man. I know the listeners do as well. So thanks for joining us this year.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, Ben, Packers up next. Packers at number 12. They could go a lot of different ways because they have those two first-round picks, right? So
yes, and also it's a very, very opinionated franchise when it comes to the draft. And so hopefully
They got some different decision-makers now there in many different ways in Green Bay. So it's not necessarily what we've seen in the past. So I'm really looking forward to getting our next guest on, giving us an overall scope of what Green Bay and their decision-making is going to look like. We'll get to that next. All right, welcome back to the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. Trevor and Ben here with you again for the second half of this podcast. Ben, that was Joe really gave us a lot of information. That was awesome. I mean, like, I felt like we not only had a Bengals beat reporter, but also like a draft guy, like truly one of us.
Yeah, and also, like, it's funny because, and this is me being mean, but I would feel like there's not that much to cover with the Bengals because
that is kind of mean.
Yeah, it's just like I don't know. To me,
you
the Bengals
should feel
are
bad
pretty,
about that.
pretty ho-hum franchise. But no, like, obviously there's a lot going on there that Joe detailed pretty nicely. And there's also a lot going on with the Packers recently.
This is very true. And the good thing is that there is no drop-off in coverage of a team or in draft knowledge with our next guest. On the line with us now, we have Owen Reese, who works for Bucky's Fifth Quarter. It's the SB Nation blog, covering basically everything that goes on in Wisconsin. Because, like, last year I went to Wisconsin, and I realized that, like, I thought I liked football, and, like, y'all are insane. So it's good that we have Owen, very good friend of the pod, here with us. Owen, thanks for joining us, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. It's I miss you guys. I haven't seen you in approximately 2 months. So
I know. I know. Yeah. Combine's always a great time because it's all those people that you talk with online that you literally barely even know in person, and then everybody just comes together when you're at the Combine in the Senior Bowl. And
insane. Yeah, I'm about to say, Owen was not at the Combine, was he?
No,
yeah,
sorry.
Screw you, Trev.
I meant to say, all right, cool, guys. All right, we're just going to get right to it then. the Green Bay Packers. Actually, so normally the first question that I ask has to do with kind of almost like a year-in-review thing. I'd like to get the listeners caught up to speed on what happened with the team in the previous year and why they're in the position that they're in, which goes into who they might be drafting. But for you, Owen, I want to talk to you about this Bleacher Report piece that came out between that really kind of detailed, some of it wasn't necessarily new information, but there was a lot of detailed stuff and back and forth and some anonymous, some not, testimonials of what it was like during the McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers era. And I don't need you to go all the way back to the beginning. If people want to read the article, they can go and read it. It's pretty good. But I just want to kind of ask you, in the closing days, really, in these last couple of years, what was it like between Rodgers and McCarthy? Was this really like as visible as a divide as kind of what it's coming out to be? And just kind of your thoughts on both sides of those things.
Yeah, so I think probably, especially over the past couple of years, it's very much seemed as though, and although both parties were very nonchalant or passive to the media about it, which obviously it's not ideal to have those types of confrontations, in the media, but it was very clear, at least to those who are into that kind of thing, body language or whatever, that there was clearly a power struggle there. And when the biggest thing too, like, so when the Packers were back in like the late 2000s or early 2010s, and Aaron Rodgers was just getting white hot, and this offense was so so potent, it was very clear that Aaron Rodgers was having fun, like literally all the time. He did the title belt thing for touchdowns, and he was just chucking for jillions of yards every week, and this offense was just this juggernaut that nobody could stop. And probably, like, I would say approximately around like the 2014. NFC Championship game, the Brandon Bostic onside kick debacle, and they lost in that. And I think really since then, it's kind of been a long time coming for this. I feel bad because I try to be pretty neutral. I think you guys know that. I try not to be real hot takey one way or the other. I try to be kind of rational about stuff, which can be a bit hard on the Twitter.com. But
gotta
I think
these takes off, man.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing, like, it was kind of a slow burn until this year. It really became more apparent. But there were high spots that almost like would camouflage it, right? So the 2016 season, they start off 4-6, and you know the whole "I think we can run the table" comment, and then they did, which was cool. And then they beat the Giants and the Cowboys in the playoffs just before getting forklifted by the Falcons in the NFC Championship game, which really looked like a team that was 4-6 that made it to the NFC Championship game. This roster has been not good for quite a while. It's getting better now, but there was a few years where it was, very apparent that it was Aaron Rodgers playing hero ball to make this team a fringe playoff contender. And I think that's really not helped anything. I think it's gotten to the point now where Rodgers was, at one point, and you can read about this in the article, but it was clear at one point that McCarthy had given Rodgers authority to make calls both in the huddle and at the line of scrimmage if he wanted to change something. And Ryan Grant, the former Packer running back, kind of compared it to artificial intelligence. And at a, yeah. at what at what point does the artificial intelligence become more intelligent than you and start to out control or to kind of be out of control, and you're trying to rein that back in? And I think that's been that's a pretty good analogy. I think that's been the struggle, is that it's been very apparent that, like, literally all the time, Rodgers is either walking off the field pissed off or visibly frustrated, whether it's with, and of course, like, they played two different rookie receivers last year, and so there's been a lot of issues, and that kind of goes back to the roster issue, but there's been a lot of indicators that this has been coming for a while, and then it all kind of really kind of came to a head. They lost to the Cardinals in Lambeau, which was a real bad look, and then they fired McCarthy, which I really did not anticipate them doing, but it's neither here nor there. But then the next week they played the Jets and made the awful decision to win in overtime and cost themselves like draft spots. But it looked like Rodgers was having fun, and I think that was like the other thing, is I don't know if it was just like the employee that was probably as intelligent as the boss, finally the boss is out of there, and he's like, well, all right, now I'm not being micromanaged, this is fun again. And kind of ended the year that way. They basically let Deshaun Kizer play the last game of the year. They started Rodgers and then had a kind of a feigned an injury, for lack of a more finesse term for it. And they let Kizer play the last week of the year. But
yeah,
it's been wild, really, because there's theoretically they should be so good with a quarterback like that. And you see what guys like Mahomes and Brady and Breeze are, all these guys, these elite teams that have these elite quarterbacks. And all everyone's saying is you can't be a great team without a great quarterback. And the Packers are sitting over here in this like purgatory where we have this elite quarterback and the team still sucks.
So
and it's really odd.
So is this like is this kind of like a LeBron James syndrome, where like everybody knows about LeBron, he just gets coaches fired because LeBron wants to coach, right? I mean, like, LeBron doesn't need you to coach him. LeBron's basically going to coach the whole team. He's going to be the coach on the floor, and then even when there's timeouts in the huddle, he's going to be the coach basically in the locker room, how he's telling guys to play. In practice, he's probably pointing things out. Is that just the way that the scenario is with Aaron Rodgers? And I kind of came to that question to you because I wonder, and I'm not sure if Ben's going to get to this question next about their new head coach, Matt LaFleur. Like, is Rodgers going to be best? Because you said there, he basically got to the point where he was artificial intelligence, and he thought, or maybe he did, know more than the head coach. My question is Rodgers ever going to be able to then tone it down from that? Like, is Rodgers ever going to be able to take direction, or do you think that he is just in the point of his career now to where he just Rodgers thinks he knows best, and this is just how it's going to be. It's going to be like we've seen with LeBron James later in his career, where he just believes that he knows best, and there's not really a head coach that you're going to want over him. You're just going to want a guy that's in the chair to fill the head coach position, when Rodgers is really the offensive coordinator, and where LeBron is really the head coach of the team. Am I onto something there?
I think you could be onto something, and I think we're going to start to see it this year because Mike McCarthy was the only head coach that Aaron Rodgers had ever played for, and that is another can of worms. They mentioned in the article that Rodgers has always had this like passive-aggressive, petty streak against McCarthy because McCarthy was in San Francisco when they drafted like Smith, and that he preferred Smith over Rodgers and that whole deal. This will kind of be the case study, I think, because they hired Matt LaFleur, and he's a 39-year-old head coach. We'll see how that goes to whether the slight age difference over Rodgers is either a blessing, like McVay, where he's more relatable to the players and more along those lines, or if it's the other way, where Rodgers is like, dude, like, you're 4 years older than me. Like, what are you going to do? So it's going to be an interesting thing. I think that's where the caveat of the year will be, because if the Packers – if Aaron Rodgers buys in and they want to, if he wants to stay within LaFleur's scheme, or at least in a good faith effort to really try to buy in, then I think the Packers will have a chance. They obviously brought in a new OC and Nathaniel Hackett as well, which I'm curious to see how they try to, whether he falls in line with LaFleur's offense or tries to bring some of the stuff he had from when he was in Jacksonville, which seemed to me to be a bit more, smash mouth power football rather than the wide zone stuff that LaFleur comes from with the Kyle Shanahan tree. But we'll have to see here, because while JerMichael Finley has been pretty outspoken about Aaron Rodgers in the past few years, so I kind of take what he says with a grain of salt, because it seems like he has a bone to pick. I think he does have a point there where when you pay someone as much money as the Packers paid Aaron Rodgers, and this is the same way LeBron is, you're the head coach, you're the GM, you're the, you know, you're making the decisions.
Right. You like you're making more money than the dude who's telling you what to do, which is right. always and a I, really weird concept.
And I don't know how that's going to go, because it seems to me that the last few years, a lot of the frustrations that Rodgers have had has seemed to be with like a lack of maybe a lack of his influence on the decisions or a lack of communication. When they fired Alex Van Pelt a couple years ago and kind of let him look elsewhere, I know that was someone that Rodgers was very close with and seemed to be upset when he was let go. And then obviously last year with Jordy Nelson, I don't know if Rodgers was really upset about that or not, but it's a guy that Rodgers was pretty openly, a guy that seems to be very closed off and very doesn't seem to have a huge circle. One of those guys that was in that circle was Jordy Nelson, and then obviously he ended up in Oakland, and there's some rumblings that he might be getting signed to a one-day contract here pretty quick with the Packers to retire as a Packer, but it'll be interesting. I think that's a really good way to put it, and it's like I said, it's an odd situation because with Sean Payton and Drew Brees, there's always been this big-time respect between the two of them, and they've worked fairly cohesively, and it's the same thing with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, this long-standing dynasty of success with these elite quarterbacks. There has to be that cooperation between the head coach and the quarterback, and whether it's one way or the other, whichever one wears the pants, that the other side is consenting with that, or that they're cool with that. So, you know, it'll be interesting because the Packers are in a tough spot here because Aaron Rodgers has been hurt quite a bit. Like I said, he more or less, I think, probably like they feigned an injury for him the last week of the year. So he got the start, but he didn't really play. But the first week of the year last year, you know, he took a shot to the knee and that affected him for about half of the year. So it'll be interesting to see because I don't know how long that window really is where he'll still be as effective as he's been in the past, or if LaFleur can kind of coach him or kind of revive him back to where he was, say, in 2014 or 2015 when he really kind of had that hot streak. He's really kind of been off to me the past couple of years. So I think a fresh start can be good, obviously, but it'll be interesting to see because Aaron Rodgers is the catalyst of the entire organization.
Yep.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said you talked about the window with Rodgers and, you know, whether or not him at 34 or 35, whatever he is, continuing obviously to perform at the level we've expected from Aaron Rodgers, even if there's a step down, you know, he's still absolutely a playoff worthy quarterback. But this year in free agency, obviously Brian Gutekunst, it's a new approach for the Packers versus what you saw with Ted Thompson. So it's big contract Za'Darius Smith, big contract Preston Smith, big contract Adrian Amos. We're going to fix the pass rush. We're going to get some heavy hitters on defense. Now you go to the Packers, like you said, young receivers. Obviously, there's going to be year two guys for, you know, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, for Equanimee St. Brown. You have a young backfield. Offensive line might need a little bit of help. But is this Packers team, you know, two first-round picks, three picks in the top 45, are they going to approach the draft thinking, if we get one or two more really high-impact players, we can make a serious run over the next couple of years?
Well, and I think that you have to, right? I mean, you have Aaron Rodgers. The roster has gotten better. I mean, we're talking a couple years ago here. The Packers are, like I said, Aaron Rodgers is supermanning his way through the playoffs, and this will never not go noticed by me. The Packers played in 3 weeks in a row, Odell Beckham, Dez Bryant, Julio Jones. You know who shadowed him all three of those weeks? Ladarius Gunter. Okay.
God bless.
And last year they picked up Tony Brown as an undrafted free agent. And that's like that. If that's where your last corner is, if that's where like the room has gotten, it's been elevated that much. Like the roster is significantly in better hands now than it was. And I think you have to, right? I mean, you have Aaron Rodgers, and if you can get a couple more impact guys, I don't think like the Packers are an 8-8 roster with Aaron Rodgers. Like outside of Aaron Rodgers, right? Mm-hmm. So like if he has the ability to elevate at any given game. And that's what, like, to me, makes the Packers so frightening. It has to be for the rest of the league. Because if for so long as Aaron Rodgers and, I mean, if he plays well, they'll win. And if he doesn't, they'll lose. If you can get him any type of surrounding, supporting cast, help, anything, like, just make his margin for error wider. And the Packers, to me, and like I said, I try to be fairly objective about this, they have to at least be like Super Bowl contender, right? Or at least a deep playoff run contender, mm-hmm. Just given the ceiling they have with Rodgers. So getting back to your question, and I apologize on this, they seem to have kind of bought themselves some flexibility in the draft with the free agent signings. Because for a long time, it was like, well, they have to take an edge rusher in the first round. Like, they just absolutely have to, because the roster was like Kyler Fackrell and Reggie Gilbert at edge rusher, with Nick Perry now cut and Clay Matthews gone. And so they went and got Za'Darius Smith and they got Preston Smith. And then they signed Adrian Amos. And that was the other spot, was, well, if they could get an edge rusher and a safety in the first round, then they'll be fine. So now they've got those guys, and I still wouldn't count those positions out as potential targets, but they just, like I said, they bought themselves the flexibility to not have to take those positions. So I think they're going to go best player available, but I would still expect, and I'm of the mindset, like, and I come from a small town high school football in Wisconsin where you put your studs on defense, because if you hold the other team to 14 points, you should probably win. You know, like, that's the same thing. If the Packers can add more tools for Mike Pettine to deal with, to me, like, that's only benefits Aaron Rodgers. So while it might not be, a stud offensive play, skill position player, or a first round lineman or something, the more you can help Aaron Rodgers, to me, that's, like I said, that he's the linchpin of the entire organization. So if you, anything you can do to make his life easier, to me, it has to be the plan. And I think they have that flexibility now in the draft with the free agent stuff, that they can really kind of see what comes to them, whether they want to trade up or down. Gutekunst traded down last year before trading back up for Jaire Alexander to accumulate the second first round pick they got. So he's shown the ability to not be nearly as head in the ground as Ted Thompson was at times. So I don't know. It's, I hate to be a cop out here, but I'm as interested to see what happens this offseason as you guys are. Obviously, following the free agent stuff, they did that. They checked that box, but now heading into the draft, I think there's probably quite a few things that could happen.
Well, you talked about them going best player available, so let's just get right to it. Number 12 overall, Green Bay is on the clock. Owen, you're on the clock for them. If the board falls like this and these are the players that are available, who are you taking for the Packers there at number 12, and tell us a little bit of why?
Well, I'm going to take Brian Burns. And like I mentioned earlier,
ooh,
I
think
it's about
nice.
Time.
You
nice.
Continue to make a strength stronger, to me. And that's, you keep strengths from becoming weaknesses by continuing to add to them. And obviously, like, it's not wrong to address weaknesses. But to me, Brian Burns is a guy. And this is a spot where Ja'Kai Polite, throughout almost the whole year, Gator great Ja'Kai Polite.
Amen, baby.
He was who I had pegged at this spot. He's a similar type rusher to me, to Burns. Obviously, Burns has handled his offseason process quite a bit better.
A little bit better.
Than Ja'Kai Polite. But to me, they need that flexible, bendy pass rusher that they signed Preston Smith, and he's a big bully, and he's like 6'5", 270. And they signed Za'Darius Smith, and he's a big bully, and he's like 6'5", 270. And Za'Darius Smith is going to play inside, I think, in nickel situations, long and late downs. So to me, like, they need another guy. And Kyler Fackrell, God bless his heart, somehow had 10.5 sacks last year on, like, 23 pressures. It was insane. I've never – a guy that –
That,
like,
is nuts. Fan
base, the fan base was clamoring for him to be cut, like, after his rookie year, and – like, it, in the year 2019, the year of our Lord, 2019, Kyler Fackrell ended his regular season with 10.5 sacks. But to
Mike
me,
Mike Pettine, baby, Mike Pettine.
Tell me about it. But so to me, like, that's, if they add Burns, right, then you make Kyler Fackrell your fourth edge rusher. Like, that's completely cool. A guy that had 10.5 sacks is your fourth rusher. And to me, the other guys I think are really a possibility here, if he were to fall, is Ed Oliver. And then the two Iowa tight ends of Fant and Hockenson. But to me, you need to continue to stock up this defense. Burns just will be another chess piece for Mike Pettine, who's shown the ability to generate pressure with Island of Misfit Toys. And so if you can get him some guys that are real difference makers, to me, that's the way to go. And then if you're looking at tight end or safety or whatever you want, at 30, go ahead. And then I know Trevor and I have talked about this in the past. I would be 100% cool with them taking Polite like at 44. I know,
bro, you can take him at 76. He'll be there.
Well, and but however it may be, Arden Kia went in the, what, the third round last year, right?
So like, that year would be the, before, I think, or no, wait, last year?
Yeah, Arden Kia was last year. But anyways, regardless,
what year is it? I don't know where we are. What are we doing?
Oh my God. I think it shouldn't be off out of the question that the Packers double up on edge and like someone like Polite, where I think you said it like I said, I'm not obviously I don't get paid, my livelihood is not on the line, but like to me, if a month and a half ago Jakai Polite was worth the 12th pick in the draft because of the football player that he is, to me at 44 you're still picking that top 15 level, whatever it would be, football player. He hasn't become a worse football player since December.
You're right.
He's been out of shape and he's interviewed poorly, but like in the business of like picking football players, and I think that's something that if the Packers have to think, if they trust their locker room or not, because in growing up I was a Ravens fan and this was always the thing, is that they were more than willing to take character guys because they had Ed Reed and Ray Lewis and Haloti Ngata, sure, and Terrell Suggs in that, right, locker room. And it was like, look, if they can't keep them together, then nobody's going to. But to me, I guess I wouldn't be surprised to see him double up on edge. I think that would be a good idea. But I think Burns at 12 is the right decision. And like I said, he's that flamethrower or NASCAR guy, whatever you want to be. He's the speed rusher, the yin to Preston Smith and Za'Darius Smith's yang, really kind of being those big bully ball type of guys.
No, it makes sense. I think Ben knows more than anybody that from when the Eagles won the Super Bowl, you got to have like an arsenal of pass rushers, right? I mean, like, you just got to, at all times, you've got to be able to sub guys in and not be sacrificing pass rush potential. So, look,
listen, I know there's only one question,
yes,
and it's, do you have enough pass rushers?
Right.
And there's only one answer, right, and it's no, at all times.
Very true. Owen, thank you so much for joining us, man. That was great stuff. Thanks for enlightening us a little bit on the Aaron Rodgers situation and then the draft as well. Good to hear from you, buddy.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, guys. Miss you. Take care. And I'll be watching you guys glow up in Nashville. So good luck with that.
Oh, I'm very excited about that. Very excited about that. Yeah. So I don't think we've announced that yet. Everybody, please go watch the draft show that we're going to have draft weekend. We're going to be going live all 3 days. Going to have some special guests. Going to be doing pick-by-pick analysis. Going to be broadcasted right on Twitter.com. It'll be easy for you guys to find. Come hang out all weekend long. We're going to be streaming for every single round the whole time. So it's going to be a blast. I'm really excited about it. Ben, we had some jam-packed information here on this first Monday of this next phase of the guest mock draft. I'm super excited for what we have for the rest of the week. I think it's going to be a good time. I think it's going to be fun.
Listen, Miami Dolphins at 13. It's time.
The biggest,
Dwayne Haskins.
Oh, my. Dwayne Haskins is off the board, dude.
Is he? Oh, wait. Did the Giants
He went six.
Drew Lock.
Do you even listen to the podcast, Ben?
Drew Lock.
My
it's
goodness.
Time. I knew we had two quarterbacks. I thought Lock had already gone.
Right,
but that's just me. That's me and my bold predictions. I think that Locke's going to leave the board before Haskins. That's a different conversation for a different day.
All right. For tomorrow, we're going to get to the Dolphins pick. I'm also going to get a new podcast partner who actually listens to the show and pays attention.
You didn't remember the picks.
Until then,
like
you guys
keep
it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.